So thank you, everyone, for coming out on this rainy night. Good rainy night. So for anybody here, is there anybody here who's new tonight? So for anybody who's new, I just wanted to say that our format at this part of the evening is before the Dharma talk, the formal talk begins, is an opportunity for anybody to ask any questions. Questions about the practice of meditation and mindfulness, the practices we've done here, or about how to bring the practices and the teachings of the Buddha Dharma and mindfulness into one's daily life, so as to facilitate healing and transformation, the end of suffering, which is not often clear to us. So it's good that we have the opportunity to talk about such matters. So if there is anybody has any questions about their practice or about the practices of mindfulness, meditation, Buddha Dharma, please, yes.
Sometimes there's like in meditation, like trying to find.
Can you just speak up a little bit? Is it, yeah.
No, it's and I find that a pattern for me is like self-flagellation. For like having not letting go of thoughts and like, during the process, I don't know, and it's like sort of a vicious cycle that I cannot be at, you know, in any sort of middle ground because I'm like chastising myself or thinking about an email. You know, it's like I don't know.
Well, can I make a recommendation?
Yes, please.
What's your name?
Chris.
Hey, Chris. Please don't do that anymore.
Okay, I was trying.
Yeah, you know, no. I mean. We want to benefit from meditation, don't we? Right? We really come to it for good reasons, right? And unfortunately, even though our purpose is good, we often bring parts of ourselves that aren't so good to the mat, to the practice. And that's that's often a wake-up call to people. Because many people approach meditation for an escape. You know, it's like my crazy mind and my big ego, you know, all that stuff. And so we want to come to meditation to get away from all that, don't we? We're looking for a break. We're looking for a little space. And unfortunately, what we find is all those habit patterns of Chris, right, come right along with it. Right? So it's frustrating. Right, because we'd like to get rid of that, wouldn't we? But the truth is we can't we? He comes right along. His busy mind, his out-of-control mind, his monkey mind, as well as all the ways he, his kind of self-talk, right? Comes right along with him. So good, I'm glad that you've noticed that, right? And it'll help you, if you're just beginning your meditation, to kind of do it right, okay? The practice of meditation is about the reduction. It's a part of this whole bigger practice of reducing, ending your suffering.
Reducing
what? Ending your suffering. Okay? That's what it's about. It's not about, or on the opposite side, we could say, it's learning to be a happy person with a, you know, with goodness in their heart, goodness in their mind, ease, openness, right? That's what the practice is about. It's not a technique to do something, you know, like have less thoughts or, you know, or achieve a certain mind state, right? You know, your practice is about changing and transforming Chris so he suffers less and is happier. Is that clear? All right, so don't, you know, the thoughts, the not thoughts, don't get hung up on that, right? I mean, the first thing you could do, right, is can you learn Chris to sit down with Chris on the mat? You see, when Chris gets on the mat, he's got a problem, doesn't he? He can't distract himself anymore, right? He can't turn on the TV, he can't get on the computer, he can't check his iPhone. You know what I mean? He can't do all the stuff he usually does to distract himself, right? So it's a very interesting experience because you've really kind of trapped yourself, haven't you? Okay. Now, when you acknowledge that, right, you can either run from that. A lot of people run from that. Or else you can say, good. right? Because if there's one thing Chris has got to do in this life is come to terms with Chris. Right? So you sit down on the mat and there he is. Right? Now you're either going to get pissed, frustrated, disappointed, right? And all those other things, right? Like you usually do. Or else you're going to try to do something else. All right, Chris? Which is, can I just sit down and accept? Accept the whole ball of wax. Not resist, not struggle, not judge, not evaluate, not yearn for something else. Right? But can you learn to sit down with Chris as he is? Because your challenge, Chris, is you have somebody in the boat with you. Right? You know who that is? It's Chris. Right? You're pulling one oar and he's pulling the other. And if you're pulling in one direction and he's pulling in the other direction, or if you're pulling and he's just not pulling, it's going to be an unhappy boat ride, isn't it? All right? And that's where many people are in this life. They're always struggling with themselves. Their good parts, their bad parts, the part of themselves that they want to be, the against the part of themselves that they don't want to be. You know? Right? Always war. So this practice is a nonviolent practice. You want to make peace. So you want to make peace with that other guy who sits with you on the mat. You know what I'm talking about? The guy with the out-of-control, busy mind, and this, right? You want to befriend him. And learn to then work with him. Right? How can we at least begin to row in the same direction? Yeah. So, the equanimity that we cultivate in this practice is not simply from a meditative technique. Right? The equanimity comes from, you know, in a certain sense, is just accepting, coming to peace with the way things are. And you are the way you are, aren't you? There's nothing you can do about it, really, can you? No. Over time, you can. Over time, healing, transformation, changes, shifts, over time, can certainly occur. That's what the practice is about. But when you begin from where you're at. Right? And you want to learn to work with Chris where he's at. Compassionately, intelligently, skillfully, patiently. Can you see? And if you can learn to do that, you will become more peaceful. Is that?
Yeah.
You know? The object of meditation is not to stop thoughts, Chris. The fact that you have lots of thoughts going on in your head is not the problem. You know what the problem is? That you follow them. Do you know? I mean, if I had a thought in my head that I was the king of the universe and the ruler over everything and everybody had to listen to me, right, and obey me, so what if I have that thought? The only problem would be what? What?
If you
acted on it. If I believed it was true and acted on it. But just as a thought, so what, right? Or I could have a thought, I am the worst person in the world. I am the lowest person in the world. Everybody should, you know what I mean? All right. But if I just see it as a thought, they come and they go. Right? How many thoughts have you had tonight since you've been here? Well, you can. Probably less than a million. Right? Have you noticed they just come and go, Chris? They just come and go. Right? Come and go, come and go, come and go, come and go. So why follow them? As you notice, they're all over the place, aren't they? Right? All over the place. They're into this and they're into that. That's just the way it is, isn't it? Again, the problem is if you make a big deal about it. So the practice isn't what you think it is. It's really it's not stopping anything. It's not preventing anything. It's not manipulating anything, including our mind. It's about how do I relate to, right? You know, all right, you got a busy mind tonight. It's all over the place, right? How are you going to relate to that busy mind? You see, that's the practice. You can't help your busy mind tonight, can you? Can you stop it? If you try to stop it, what happens? It gets busier. It gets worse, right? Yeah. So why don't you just step back and just watch it. Just, you know, busy mind. But just because the mind is busy doesn't mean you have to be busy. You can be relaxed, even with a busy mind. Unless you follow it, or unless you try to stop it, then you get in trouble, don't you? So learn to let go. Relax. Just try that for a while. Any other questions? Yes.
Hello, my name is Brian.
You just walk in and you have a question already. You just came in and you have a question.
Yeah.
Oh, what's your question, Ryan?
So I just
Oh, well, you missed the first 45 minutes. We do mindfulness meditation. So we spent the first 45 minutes doing sitting and walking meditation. And when we finish that, now we have a talk. And the talk begins with questions and answers in relationship to meditation, mindfulness. Okay? So that's what you've wandered into tonight. Did you know what you were coming to, or you just kind of wandered in off the street? Okay. No, that's okay. That's fine. So again, so you're kind of coming in. The meditation is over. Some people have questions. And if there are no more questions about the practice, then there's a talk. Okay? Welcome, Ryan. Anything else before we begin the talk? So as you know, for several months now in the various sanghas, I've been teaching from this book of Thich Nhat Hanh's calligraphy, The Mindful Art of Thich Nhat Hanh, and it contains a lot of his very short, brief words, sayings in his calligraphy. And I've been calling this the pith teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh, because even though these teachings are very short and brief, pith teachings are teachings that are very brief, but they have the potential of the whole tree. And so these are very powerful teachings. Can you read this? What's your name?
Denise.
Denise. Can you read it out loud?
The pure land is now or never.
The pure land is now or never. So this is a very powerful teaching. Now, as we've done, the other ones we've done here are, which ones? We've done, Are You Sure?
This Is It.
This Is It. What?
Peace
Is Every Step. Again, all very brief, short, but very powerful if they are put into action, brought into life. So this one is, the pure land is now or never. Very powerful teaching. Let me just say something about the pure land. Oh, and it's capitalized here. What the pure land refers to is in greater Buddhism, there are various schools, traditions, of which Zen is a lineage that we practice in. But there's a Buddhist tradition called the Pure Land tradition, and it is very widely practiced in Mahayana Buddhism among kind of lay people, and it is a practice. It's really analogous to I think those of us come from a kind of tradition with heaven and faith and things like that. It's sort of like that, actually. There is this Buddha of boundless light called Amitabha, who reigns in this pure land in the Western kingdom, which is kind of in this greater metaphysical kind of realm. And this is a land that, if one is very devoted to the practices of Amitabha Buddha and chant this mantra of him and are very devoted, etc., one aims after death to be reborn in Amitabha's pure land. Okay. Sound familiar? So. So for many practitioners who don't really practice in the Zen tradition or the meditative tradition, it's a very common kind of practice. And people practice sort of a good religious life, and they pray to Amitabha Buddha, and their hope is by following a good life and chanting his mantra as much as he can, being devoted, at their death their consciousness will be reborn in the pure land, and therefore they will dwell happily ever after in Amitabha's pure land. So Thich Nhat Hanh, being a Zen master, gives it a very different cast. He says the pure land is now or never. The now is one thing. The never really makes it even stronger. So the first thing he's obviously saying is the pure land, or for those of you who relate to heaven, right? We could say heaven. We could say heaven is now or never. Right? So saying that the pure land or heaven is now is very profound. Right? Because usually if the pure land, if heaven is something we get to, following this life or following a whole series of practices, it's something we get to. You know, there's this life and then there is the next life in which we will enjoy this heavenly existence. This life in a pure land. But he says the pure land is now. The pure land is now, which would mean this land, this earth, this place where we dwell now, this is the pure land. It's not a geographical place, as many people believe. And it's not a place that is found in the future. It is not a place bound by space and time, right? The way people think. Heaven's a place that I get to at some point in the future. He says, no, the pure land is right now. A pure land is what? What does pure mean?
Impure.
Well, just say, just the word pure. When we think of pure, it would be opposite to what? Impure. So this is interesting. What is this pure land? Right, what is this pure land? Yes, Ryan?
A state of consciousness.
Yes.
Pure land is perfect for you are.
Pure. Something, if water is pure, it means it lacks all impurities. It is pure unto itself, right? All contaminations, all impurities are not present. It is something pure, undefiled. Right? So, a pure land is a place free of all defilements, free of all impurities, free of all contaminations. Right? Now somebody might say, how can this right, Easter, how can this land be a pure land? It doesn't look very pure to me, right? Right? It doesn't look very pure to me, does it? There's all kinds of stuff going on, right? All kinds of impurities in this world. War and violence, and sickness and disease and poverty and garbage and, right? Endless in the way people treat each other, and anger and violence and fear and worry and despair and drugs and, right? Sounds like a fairly impure world, right? And so most people would think, that's why people think of heaven as what? Heaven is described as what? Birds singing, people in wings, right? I mean, if you think of the description of heaven, it's pure, right? There's no garbage collection. You know, you never hear of sewage problems in heaven, right? Can you see? It's a material conception, right, of purity and impurity, right? So if this world is a world of impurity, then we imagine that heaven must be someplace that, there's no garbage collection, there's no sewage, nobody goes to the bathroom, food doesn't rot, only pure smells, only beautiful flowers, birds are always singing, and nobody dies in heaven, right? They've already died in this world of suffering. Heaven, that goes on forever. All your relatives are there. You know, but nobody ever thinks about all the relatives they can't stand they're going to meet. Right? I mean, it's funny. When you talk about people who believe in going to heaven and they're going to be reunited with their relatives, they only think about the relatives that they want to be reunited with. They never think about all the ones they can't stand that they're going to have to spend the rest of eternity with. Right? So it's all... Can you see what you... But this is not that. This is not geographic. And the impurities and purities that are being presented here have nothing to do with material reality. They have to do with mind. This mind. Because why are things labeled pure, impure, dirty, clean? What labels that? The mind. The mind divides up the world. The mind decides, this is clean, this is dirty, this is good, this is bad, this I want, this I don't want, right? This is good smell, this is bad smell, this is pretty, this is ugly. What does that? Right? Things in themselves don't do that. Do they? Garbage doesn't think I'm dirty. Human beings, not their bodies, but their minds. So when we understand that purity and impurity are classifications, projections, perceptions of mind, a mind that does not see clearly, when the mind is liberated from that kind of false perception, then everything appears what? Pure. But pure, not the purity of this, what he's talking about, is not a purity that stands in opposition to something called impurity. This is the purity of things just as they are. Is this a pure watch or an impure watch? Is this a pure watch or an impure watch? So you laugh. Pure. Everything's pure? Absolutely pure. Good. Pure, but what does that mean, absolutely pure? Everything's pure.
Perception is that good is the one that's
I can't hear you. What?
If you want everything to feel perfect, everything is perfect.
Yeah, so you don't... Right, both perfect and imperfect. So you... So we say this watch, just as a watch, is what? Is perfect. It's perfectly what? It's perfectly a watch. That's all it is. Right? Garbage is perfectly garbage. Right? Flowers are perfectly flowers. Manure is perfectly manure. And even war is perfectly war. It's a perfection that is not about judgment, evaluation, assessment. It is a perfect. It is a capacity of seeing things just as they are and knowing that inherently they are perfect just as they are. They are pure. Pure of what? Pure of any defilement of the mind. Okay. The pure land is now. So this is a direct challenge to those of us who are living in the future for our reward. Right? The pure land is now, heaven is now. I mean, if I am ever going to experience heaven, it's going to have to be when? Now. This is now. This is now. When you walk outside, that'll be now. When you go home, that'll be now. When you get up tomorrow morning, that'll be now. When you go to work tomorrow, that'll be now. Right? Every moment is now. And what this is saying to us is what? If you want to be in the pure land, do it now. Right, Chris? So when you were on that cushion, being very frustrated with Chris, were you in the pure land? No, you were in hell. All right. But next time you have that experience, maybe you'll remember, do I want to be in the pure land right now? Or do I want to be in hell? Because you are in charge of making that choice. Right? When you can see that you are in hell and you can label it as such, then you have the capacity of what? Of letting go. I don't want to be here. Why I come to meditation, why do I create suffering for myself? Right? Crazy, isn't it? I came here to be happy and yet I sit down and create suffering. No. Let me stop. Let me start over. Because if I want to be happy, I can only be happy when? Now. Right? If I want to get to the pure land, if I want to get to heaven, right? Chris, I know, wants to get to heaven. I say, Chris, do it now. Right now. Mm-hmm. If heaven is a place of goodness, right? If heaven is a place where everybody treats each other well, then do it now. Be that way now. Is that clear? It's a very powerful teaching. But then he goes on to say, now or never. So this is the pure land is now, heaven is now, heaven on earth. I mean, that's good. You know, in a certain sense, the pure land is now is good enough, but he said is now or never. So he adds a little what? He adds a little immediacy to it. Right? Because he knows us, right? Chris might say, yeah, I like that. The pure land is now. I'm going to have to remember to practice that at some point. Right? Some other time. So Thich Nhat Hanh, he knows we're lazy. He knows we procrastinate. Right, he knows we always think we'll have time for this tomorrow, later on. When when things clear up in my life. When I'm not so busy. When I'm not so stressed. When I don't have so many things to do, right? Then I'll get to heaven. Then I'll live in the Pure Land. But the truth is, we don't know. Sunday, we had a very interesting experience at meditation in Tampa. Our bell ringer, you know, like Mel was tonight, our bell ringer keeled over and fell flat on his head. Blood pouring out. He passed out. Luckily, we had two physicians in our sangha and a nurse quickly. And I say that only... he's all right, by the way. He's got a busted nose. And he just said, he's all right. I mean, actually, he knows he's all right because he spent a night in the ER where they did every test in the world. So he knows. He said they did everything but set his nose, which was really the only thing that was wrong at the end of that. But they did every test in the world, so he's really functioning quite well. But I say that because we act as if we know what's going to happen to us. Right? We act as if we have all the time in the world to realize our plans and to have time for everything. But the truth is, we don't know anything. We don't know our health. We don't know what our concerns are. We don't know the way life is going to go. You know, we talk this way, but it's true. We don't know if we're going to get home tonight. Right? We act as if we live that way. That's the way we live. But the truth is, if we really said 100% sure, do you know you're absolutely going to make it home tonight? Do you know right now you're cancer free? Does anybody here really know that their bodies is 100% cancer free at this moment? No, we don't even know that, do we? We don't know what's going on in our own bodies. There's so much we don't know. Right? And I don't say that to scare us. I say that to kind of wake us up. Because we act as if we have all the time in the world and all our plans, not only our plans for today, our plans for this week, our plans for this month, we even have plans for our whole life. Right? We know exactly how things, I'm working toward this, and after 10 years of this, then I'll do that, and after five, right? Does anybody know they're really going to, it's going to work out that way? No. Plans are hypotheses. They're guesses. They're fantasies, aren't they? They're not real. This is real. This moment is real. This is the only thing we really know. We have this moment. We don't really know how things are going to be in an hour. Right? We hope they'll be good. I mean, right? I mean, it's good to hope. If you want to hope, you know, hope they'll be good. Believe they'll be good, but we don't know. And I say that to wake us up, because to know that is, yeah. If I'm going to get my act together, when am I going to do it? Well, after I get this project done. But you might never get this. You know, there are people who never, you know, who don't get through a project. Things happen. The Pure Land is now or never. If you want to be happy now. If you want to be free from suffering, be free from suffering now. If you want to, stop being an angry person, resentful person, if you want to stop living in the past, if you want to stop worrying about the future, if you want to, you know, now. If you want to be a forgiving person, now. If you want to look deeply into life, now. I mean, when else are you going to do it? The Pure Land is now or never. This is the Pure Land. No matter what's going on in the external world, Things may be going well for us. Things may not be going well for us. Things may be going well with our relatives and family. Things may not be. And yet, each of us, in the moment, have the capacity to have an open, free, undisturbed mind. And that's the truth. But we have to remember what? That the Pure Land is always available to us. We just have to stop, as Chris has pointed out, we have to stop turning this Pure Land into a hell realm. Right? We turn it into a hell realm. When we fill this realm with fear, anger, resentment, judgment, resistance, struggle, conflict, right? It becomes a hell realm, not a heavenly realm. And we are the cause of that. Nobody can control your mind unless you allow it to happen. Nobody can make you angry. Anger is an internal state. Nobody can make you anxious. Nobody can make you worried. Nobody can make you despair. Those are internal states. They arise where? In our minds. Right? They don't arise outside of our minds. When you know that, and you then have the tools that facilitate transformation, then you're on the path to freedom. Freedom of what? Freedom from conditioning. Right? Freedom from always having to do it the way you've always done it. That's conditioning. You're free to create the Pure Land. Is it going to happen right away, Chris? No. It's going to happen over time. But you can start by making peace with life. Just doing that puts us on the path to the Pure Land. To make peace with life. Many people are always fighting life, struggling with life, resisting life, angry at life, scared of life. But that's because we're standing outside of it and not realizing that life is really something that we're creating and that we have that power. Right? The power of the mind. It's very powerful. But maybe you disagree with me. Anybody want to disagree? Or anybody have any questions about, can the Pure Land really be now? Yes.
Just want to see if I'm beginning to connect the dots in the right way. In our rituals we use, and I think you've also spoken on of dichotomy. Mm-hmm. And when I see the pure and the impure, that's to me an example of a dichotomy.
Of a duality, right.
A duality, right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're working to get ourselves away from.
We have
more pure moments in our...
I mean, the ultimate teaching of Buddhism is the teaching of non-duality.
Right.
But the world of duality also has its relevance. Right? So if I said, from the point of view of the absolute, right? Whether the world's at war, whether the world's at peace, is really the same. It just is what it is. It's just things unfolding, right? Victims and perpetrators are just two sides of the same coin, right? In nature, there are victims and there are predators, right? And we accept that, right? I mean, you're not crusading to get rid of all the lions, all the hyenas, all the jackals. No, right? When we look at nature, we accept what? Yes, there are predators and there are those who get attacked by predators. And yet, if you had the capacity of protecting a gazelle from an attacking lion, you might do that. Right? If you saw, I see cats going after birds, and I throw a stone at them. I don't want to hurt them, but I just, because I'm making a choice. What? Protect the birds. That's the relative world. But if we look more deeply, we can't hate the cat, can we? The cat is just following its nature, isn't it? Yeah. So in the same way, from a certain way, we can look at life and say, predators and victims, two sides of the same coin. Yesterday's victim is tomorrow's predator. Perpetrator, today's perpetrator is next year's victim. And that's true, right? Groups of people who were the underdog then become the top dog, right? We were in favor of them when they were the underdog, and we hated the ones who were persecuting them, and now they're persecuting them, right? That's just the way it is, isn't it? And yet, in the moment, in the historical moment, we may choose to protect. But when we look more deeply, we realize there's something else going on here. Right. So from the deepest point of view, the absolute point of view, there is no pure or impure. Things are just what they are. We call that purity with a capital P. It's a purity that doesn't stand apart from impurity. And yet, we can certainly say from the relative point of view, right? Chris, would you rather suffer or be happy? Because that side of what's called the relative side, the historical dimension, also has its validity. Right? I mean, you might say, in the absolute sense, there is no death, because there is no birth, right? There is no self. But again, knowing that doesn't mean you just want to walk out in the traffic, right? So there's a common sense to all this, which is, the relative world has its own way of operating that has to be respected. Right? Even though you may know that even when someone dies, at its deepest level, there really is no death. And yet, from the relative level historically, someone who was born is dying. So it's both. And that's why, I know you're very much an activist. That is why when you unite the two, the deeper understanding of causation and how and that to say this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong, this is true, this is untrue, is not intrinsically true. Things are just what they are. And yet, in life, we are called upon to act. When you bring the two together, you can act, but you act without anger, you act without resentment, you act without, believing I am right. And you're wrong. So holding those two simultaneously allows one to act, but act freely, purely. What is a pure act? It's an act that there's no self, there's no anger, there's no ego, there's no desire to harm. It's a pure act. Does that make sense?
I have to explain this when I go home.
Okay, all right.
Just getting a little extra credit.
Okay. Okay, before we end, any other questions? Yes, Roy.
Would you say that placing love on existence and knowing existence is love?
What?
Would you say that if you place love on existence and you know existence is love, as existence is love, is that a good lifestyle? Would you think that having the love of existence and knowing everything is love, and knowing existence,
what do you mean by love, Ryan?
Love as in feeling to love existence, just to love existence.
What does that mean, to love existence? Those are words, right? What does that actually mean? If you say you love existence, what?
Love other people, mm-hmm. who they are. You know, like a marriage couple, they love each other for who they are. If you love existence for what it is, mm-hmm. is that a good lifestyle?
Buddhism kind of goes at it sort of probably what you're saying, but a little different way. Thich Nhat Hanh, do you know who Thich Nhat Hanh is? Thich Nhat Hanh says, love is understanding. That when you love someone, you understand them deeply. It's not just an intellectual. When you love someone, there's... Yeah, but that's... Again, do you love... Like, what are you doing there with that elbow of yours? What are you doing with your elbow? Are you massaging it or are you holding it up?
Holding it.
All right.
Like this.
All right. So. Well, just go back to what you were doing. Okay. Now, would you say that your left hand loves does your right hand love your left elbow? I mean, look what it's doing, Ryan. Right? You know, if it was separate, it would just be going, right? I mean, it would just pull it away and say, I don't care about you. I mean, why should I be holding you up, right? When's the last time you held me up? Right? That's the world of separation. But in the world of oneness, right? Look at that wonderful hand. Even though it's fine, and even though it's a little bit of a stress on it, it reaches over and supports that other. That's love. That's caring. It's unconscious at its deepest sense because it comes from a sense of interconnection. So in Buddhism, love is not something to work on. In Buddhism, love is the natural state of the mind, not as an emotion, but because there's no separation. Right? When there's no separation between your two hands, the right hand reaches over to support the left. It doesn't think about it, does it? That's love. If you're still thinking about it, that's not love. Yeah. So it's spontaneous. The less self-centeredness, the less separation, the more that one feels connected, part of, interconnected with people, with life, that which is called love naturally occurs. That caring, that support naturally occurs. The same way we what? We care for ourselves, right? If your stomach hurts, what do you do? What?
Make you want to say, deny.
Yeah, but look at your nice hands. You see, they go right there, and they might even massage it. Right now, are your hands in pain? No, the stomach's in pain. But look at those loving, caring hands of yours. They just reach over there, right, and they say to the belly, "What? Can I help you?" But they don't even say it, and they don't ask anything in return, do they? That's love. It's a very high state. Our hands have it. But our minds, it can take a lot of work. But our hands are highly developed. They just reach over and do what's needed to be done. So we can learn a lot from our hands. Actually, there's a famous Zen koan where, what is the highest truth of Buddhism? And the master said, in the night, I can't remember exactly, but something, in the night when I'm sleeping, the pillow, my head has, the pillow has kind of moved away from under my head, and even while I'm asleep, my hand reaches out and puts the pillow back under my head. He said, that's love. That's love. So good. Why don't we stop here? Thank you for coming.